Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Me. I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for spending time with me today. I always look forward to it. I can hardly wait for us to hang out and learn and grow in God's Word and ask good questions and hear amazing guests and try to advance in kingdom work and make a difference. I love this passage in James chapter 1. It starts in verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. All right? So we're going to ask for all kinds of wisdom today because we need it. I want it, and I think I want more of it. So we're going to talk to my friend Patrick Albanese coming up right after the break, and then Karen Swallow Pryor is going to be joining me. And she's got an amazing story as a result of an accident. She stepped into the street and got hit by a bus, and she's talking about the role of the body in healing after trauma. And she's going to give some reflections on her bus accident. That's all ahead in the first hour. We'll take 60 seconds and be right back.
Every day on Faith Radio, you hear relevant Bible preaching, family-focused teaching, and compelling conversations, all designed to help you connect faith to life. And this is all made possible through listener support. I'm Neil Stava, manager of Faith Radio, inviting you to make a gift today. We're approaching the end of our financial year on June 30th, and we're 16% remaining toward meeting our budget commitments. A gift of any size makes a difference. And every gift is needed for us to finish the fiscal year strong and move ahead in ministry. And through your support, the gospel goes out and lives are changed, families strengthen, and communities are impacted. Thank you for your partnership. Here's how to make your gift. Online at myfaithradio.com or on the phone at 877-933-2484 and press 2 to make a gift. You're part of reaching your community for Christ with your best gift now at myfaithradio.com or by calling 877-93-FAITH.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Welcome back to the show. You know, I love Mondays, and I always love to get a chance to catch up with my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. And I don't get to say this very often. I don't get to say, Patrick, how was banjo camp this weekend?
Okay. Banjo camp was fantastic. It was very inspirational. And I got to say, I have never been more motivated in my life to floss regularly.
Yeah.
Gonna throw that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those jokes about banjo players, those aren't jokes.
They're kind of true, aren't they? Well, you know, it's
fun.
Whenever you do something like that, it says something about our love and passion for hobbies and pursuing things that just bring us joy.
Absolutely. And there's similarities. I've worked as a magician and gone to magic conventions, and it was almost identical to being at banjo camp. I'm sure it's like going to those comic cons and, you know, things where people are, I don't even like to use the word passionate. They just have this hobby that really fills them with joy. And then they surround themselves with a bunch of like-minded people for a weekend and they have fun of all things. And then of course, you know, you see the guys that have the t-shirt that says, you know, banjo camp 1987. And you're thinking, I'll bet you got one from every year. And I'll bet in order to preserve the color, you have refused to launder that thing. Downwind over here. But, you know, but there are those people, and it's so joyful. And you know, as goofy as sometimes the hobbies that I have, the kind of people that gravitate toward them, including me, you know, a little on the geeky side. When you're among a bunch of like-minded people, you go, well, this is just fun. This is just fun. And boy, we don't get enough of that, do we?
No. And then the fellowship that you get from like-minded people that enjoy a similar thing is, again, something to be celebrated. Well,
yeah, and there's a really unique thing. You know, you see somebody from who knows where, and like there would be these classrooms, and you're sitting in a classroom with 20 strangers, people you've from all around the country, some from foreign countries, and you know nothing about them other than sometimes you take in a visual and you say, that guy looks a little bit odd, you know. And then you all start talking the thing that brought you there. And all of it goes away, and you realize, you know, it's that age old thing. We're more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm.
We're all just people, and it's really nice to see. You know, for the most part, I heard minimal conversations about real life stuff like politics. You know, the guy that I drove down with was itching to start a conversation about how much he disliked Trump. I go, I'm not biting because I'm doing this trip for an entirely different reason. I'm doing it to unload from that. I want to take that one ton weight of always being possessed by the world's falling apart and say, no, this weekend, it's not falling apart. This weekend, the world is fun.
Yeah.
I can go back to the falling apart world on Monday, but I'm not going to ruin my leisurely weekend of the world is just fine. I think it's okay to live in ignorance is bliss, you know. It's okay to live that way for a couple of days.
So just give a ringing endorsement how important it is to enjoy this kind of fellowship where you get together with people that just have a similar interest and you just laugh and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, and you find yourself, you know, talking about this thing. In this particular case, it was the banjo. It's been, you know, magic. And somebody says, oh, you got to see this card trick that I do. And you say, I've seen 3,000 card tricks, but I got room for one more. Mm-hmm. And this was a lot like that. I even went to something that I've avoided for years. These jam sessions where you got to go play with a bunch of people. I don't know how to do that. And they're kind of just, come on in. It's okay. Doesn't matter. There's no right. There's no wrong. And the fellowship and support of people, for some reason, when you have a common interest, there's a support network. I don't know why that is. I'm sure you've noticed that too in various pursuits of yours where you say, why is it that when you get together with like-minded people, they're so supportive of each other? A Bible study could be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You say, look at this. We share this Bible in common. And what are we doing? We're supporting each other. What a concept.
And I understand that Amazon Alexa is always listening unless one is brought to banjo camp.
That's right. Unless. Although I remember, occasionally you get so used to Alexa being around that you walk through. We were staying in these little dorm rooms, like college. It was a college campus, population of 1,400. And I think they all left town when the banjos arrived. But, mm-hmm. I passed the one church that has the marquee out. And, you know, I had a sign up that says, you know, are you tired of sin yet? I thought, well, I'm tired of other people's sin for sure. My own. Why do you think I have my own sin? You
know, yeah.
Alexa wouldn't even. She's like, I'm on break.
Yeah. Now, I'm guessing banjo camp was a little spendy, but not as spendy as a trip to the International Space Station, which is $50 million to go and $35,000 a night.
Oh, yeah. But that includes meals, doesn't it?
I think so. I think room service ends at 10, though. So
wait, it's 50 million?
50 million.
50 million?
Yes.
And then they still hit you up for room and board?
Yeah, they do.
So that's basically the flight.
Yes,
yeah. Well,
exactly.
It's first class all the way, I tell you. Yeah, banjo camp, a similar amount of spendiness. You know, it's funny. I barely opened my wallet because they had taken care of everything, which was another beautiful thing, the way they set it up. You don't have to worry about anything. We got the meals. We got everything covered. There's coffee stations galore. You will not want for anything. And it really opens up your wallet to spend in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't bought a taco anywhere. I guess I'll go look at a new banjo. You know, it was actually quite brilliant. Well, $50,035,000. How many nights? What's a minimum stay?
You know, I don't know.
Is that double occupancy? I'm just curious.
I don't know. That's a lot of dough. So
I had a shared dorm, by the way. Just, okay. You know, with the common bathroom. And the guy next to me, I'd hear him take a shower and he'd go off into his dorm. And then I'd hear the blow dryer going. And then when I'm, you know, walking the hallway, let's just say that a dolphin has more hair than this guy had. He would blow dry his hair for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And there was hair there. So, huh. Anyway, sorry.
Just some of the interesting stories from Banjo Camp. So I know not to jolt you back to reality, but you do live in Des Moines. And boy, have the Democratic candidates landed in Des Moines.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, I have a lot of friends who are pretty liberal, so they're excited because, you know, they want to touch the cloak, so to speak, of these candidates. And, you know, it's a first stop. They'll abandon us as soon as the Iowa caucuses are over. And I think everybody here knows that. But I'm hearing, you know, you hear the buzz and, that Pete Buttigieg, he speaks eight languages. I go, okay. It's okay. So what?
Yeah.
I mean, did you ask him about policy positions or are you just like with Obama going, I'm just really impressed with, you know, how well he speaks. So what? You know, it's a mystery to me because I really think highly of where I live. And I think there are very sharp people here. I love that we have caucuses here so that we have some say in who eventually becomes a candidate. And I find it disturbing that the people that, you know, often portray themselves as smarter than everybody else are taken in by, you know, a crease in a man's slacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're the ones that are always telling us that you're so smart and we're so stupid. And now you're like, oh, I really, that guy can speak eight languages. I'm in. It's not enough.
Yeah. Patrick, let me take a little break. And just on another note, I'm glad you drove to Banjo Camp because on a Russian airport security camera, they found a huge brown bear wandering through security. I thought, you know what? Only in Russia. You know, they always talk about Russia.
The Russian bear.
Russian bear. Patrick Albanese is my guest. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. I'm enjoying a Monday conversation with Patrick Albanese, my friend from prestigious West Des Moines, the great state of Iowa. So, Patrick, when I look at some of the statistics, and I don't, you know, put a lot of weight in stats, but it said that 55% of women prefer socialism. Do you have any observations about that?
Boy, oh boy, that's interesting. Whenever I see surveys, and like you, I don't put a lot of credence in, I'd say about 52% of statistics I just don't believe.
Right.
But they're made up. But I look at a survey like that and I go, I need to understand that, you know, did you just out and out say, do you prefer socialism? Or did they phrase it with the, do you prefer social services? Do you think the government should be, you know, in charge of the army and the libraries? Gosh, you got to have the libraries and the streets and the, you know, and they go, well, gosh, yes. And then you have your survey that says people prefer socialism because do they paint a proper portrait of what socialism really is? I just feel like with these surveys that they don't. I think they're skewed a little bit because I need to see the questions they asked. And did they just really walk up to people and say, you like socialism? Yes or no? I don't think they do. Do they? Like, I've never had anybody ask me that question. Did I ever tell you, I once got a call before the 2016, before the caucuses the last time. And they were desperately trying to get me to answer in the negative to the conservative candidate running because it's like, we're just an informal survey place. How do you feel about the fact that so-and-so candidate said that they want to cut funding to schools? That was the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, did that candidate say that? I didn't hear that. What did they say? Well, I don't have the exact words here.
Boy.
Like I would need the exact words, but that's the question they asked me. How do you feel that, you know, this Republican candidate said, we're going to cut funding to schools? I go, I never heard that. And they didn't have it. They didn't have the answer. They didn't have the wording. And after a while, the guy hung up on me. So
that sounds about right.
But I don't know about Whitman. Yeah. Anyway, if they prefer socialism, I'd say, well, I need to understand what do you understand socialism to be? You know, it would be neat if socialism worked, that mm-hmm. every need you have was taken care of, that your housing and your food and your medical and, you know, wow, I don't even have to work if I don't want to.
Yeah.
That would be neat. That's called being a teenager,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. And the latest thing out of Venezuela right now is taking a shower is the new luxury.
Yeah, that's that was like banjo camp as well. Just because the word camp is in the name, you don't have to pretend like we're actually camping. You do have showers and you can use them. Yeah. Now, you know what's funny about that too? Like the teenager who, you know, lives under socialism because it's like everything's provided for me. What's the one thing that the teenager can't wait to do? Get out from under it.
Right.
I can't wait to get out of this house. All these stinking rules that my parents put on me, you know, all they do is provide me is food, lodging, medical, dental. mm-hmm. I don't have to work. I can loaf. I slept till noon, you know, and all they're doing is they're itching to get out from underneath it and go live in the real world, get a job, provide for themselves, pay their own bills, because then they don't have that oppressive, the overseers. So it's like you go, well, there's socialism for you. And when you talk to any 16-year-old and you say, well, how do you like living at home? I can't wait to get out. You go, yes. You live under socialism right now. You got it all taken care of for mm-hmm. you. And you don't get it.
Yeah. So because we are in the entertainment business and have been for many, many years, this does catch my attention that the Tony Awards went to a new all-time low. I keep wondering when people in the entertainment business are just going to entertain.
I don't understand why they can't even see the writing on the wall that, you know, somebody has to sit down with them and say, well, the ratings are dropping again. And their answer is, you know what we need? More Trump hatred. <That's> you know, get De Niro back, you know, have Robert De Niro curse on camera where you have to bleep it out. That's what the people like. You know, I don't understand why they don't see the writing on the wall. That people, and everybody kind of knows that Hollywood and New York, you know, the entertainment business leans to the left. And for the most part, people don't care. They say, just do the thing that we hired you to do, because that's what you're doing when you buy a ticket. You're hiring somebody to do something. So can you imagine if you hired a general contractor to come in and, you know, remodel your bathroom, and all he did was say, by the way, I don't like that Trump guy. Oh, it's like, can you just finish the bathroom? You know, can you just do the thing I hired you to do? That's how I look at entertainment. I hired you for a specific reason with my eyeballs. I'm paying with my eyeballs or my mm-hmm. wallet ticket. So do the thing I paid you to do. That's all I'm asking. Not something else.
Yeah.
Just like any other business, I go, I didn't hire you to do that. I hired you to do this.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'll figure it out though.
Yeah. Now with kids out of school and in a blink of an eye, it's going to be the 4th of July. And do you start to feel a little bit more patriotic? Do the flags go out in the neighborhoods? What's it like in Iowa, in Des Moines?
Well, the flags go out.
Okay.
You know, it's not going to be every house. And, you know, I don't think there are, I'm sure that we have some people here that go, I hate that flag. And, you know, obviously our flag provides them the freedom to hate the flag, but they go out and it's really nice. You know, driving down your beautiful little street, you know, carefully lined with potholes and seeing the flags out there,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's like, this feels, I like the patriotic.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it.
Yeah. And Patrick, what do you think about Senator Joe, or Vice President Joe Biden, I should say, and him flipping on the Hyde Amendment? That seems to be a pretty significant change of position.
Yeah. And what's amazing is, and I believe the Democrats are making a big mistake by thinking they can get away with doing these flip-flops because it will maybe help him in this primary process where people say Joe moved left, but I have absolutely no idea how he moves back to the center now for the general election, because his big selling point And this is kind of like, you know, the Tony Awards are on. They have a new all-time low. Joe Biden was leading in the polls, and he was the centrist of the 24 candidates. He was considered the most center, and he makes a big lurch to the left because he's afraid of losing that left flank. And you think, Joe, your advantage was that you were in the center. Mm-hmm. That was your support, and you just abandoned it. And what else will you abandon, and how fickle are you? Because, you know, the old, you know, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, at some point, and I believe if he were to be the nominee and he gets in debates with Donald Trump, Trump doesn't let stuff like that slide. He's going to bring up every flippity floppity thing that the guy's ever done. And it's going to be embarrassing. So I was kind of stunned that he did it. Do you remember years ago, Bill Clinton was running, and he had that the infamous Sister Souljah moment.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Souljah moment. So the rap artist Sister Souljah made some pretty disparaging comments that would be considered racist in any time frame. And something about, I believe, wanting the extermination or the death of some of white people. And Bill Clinton, a candidate for president, said, "I disagree, and we don't need that kind of thing here." And a lot of people will point to that moment, say that might be a thing where he really grabbed a huge chunk of the center because they said, yes, that's right. Fair is fair. You know, and if he would have accepted and said, I second that, he probably would have lost support. And now you look at all these 20 years later and you say, whenever somebody brings up a grievance, every Democrat is jumping on board saying, yes, reparations. Yes, this. Yes, that. Yes. You know, we need to, you know, tax people at 90%. And I'm waiting for somebody, and I think it will really help whoever the Democrat nominee is going to be, who will say, nah, I draw the line. Nope. Mm-hmm. And Biden was that guy, and now he's not.
Yeah.
Well, you made a mistake.
I appreciate always getting a chance to talk to you on Mondays, Patrick. And I love this John Newton quote. I think I sent it to you. And it's, in short, I am a riddle to myself, a heap of inconsistence. You know, it's interesting how a guy who is as solid as John Newton was can be troubled by his own self. And as we try to go through this journey of life, when we take God's word and we consume it, and then we lay who we are in Christ first and foremost, because we don't know who we are until we know who we are in Christ, that how powerful it is to be sharing and fellowshipping and connecting and encouraging one another, which you do for me all the time. So thank you very much.
Well, I'm just trying to return the favor, you know, for the people that listen to your show that don't know, I was a wanderer, and then you were my Sherpa, mm-hmm. so to speak. You know, you're the guy that said, maybe I can point you in a direction. You know, I asked, and you offered the help. So if I can ever be a person that, you know, does that kind of thing for you, you know, and any listener who's interested, because that's why we're here, isn't it?
Amen. Patrick, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks.
Yep. Patrick Albanese has been my guest. He's my friend from Des Moines. We'll take a little break and be right back.
WSP.edu/. All I want to do is praise your name, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name with lift our voices and proclaim. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. All I want
to do is. I'm always really happy whenever I get a chance to speak to Karen Swallow Pryor. She's the professor of English at Liberty University and a research fellow with the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. She recently had, about a year ago, an incident, I should say accident, that was very traumatic. We're going to talk about that and her reflections on being hit by a bus. Karen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I know this is such a big topic because trauma, your body registers trauma, and then you have to deal with it, don't you?
Yes, I mean, this is something I think most of us have heard about. I certainly knew about, but until it happened to me, I really did not understand how that works. And I certainly understand it a little bit better a year out from my accident.
I mean, it's the whole thing, first of all, when you think about it, is hard to, it seems surreal, doesn't it? That you step out and all of a sudden you see a bus and it's hitting you and then writhing pain and you're laying on the ground and you're going, what just happened? Oh, does my body hurt?
Yeah, I mean, that is not something that you wake up in the morning and expect to happen to you. And that's exactly how it felt at the time that it happened. And, you know, this reflection that I wrote a year later, you know, kind of talks about a little bit about what happened initially, but then just what I've learned, not only about my emotions and my mind in responding and healing from that pain, but even the kinds of things that are still going on in my body, despite, you know, it being, you know, pretty much, I would say 90% healed from the accident itself. There's still other, you know, sort of visceral parts of the trauma that linger behind.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever have any discussions with anybody about the way your body registers trauma prior to your accident, or is this a whole new experience learning about it yourself?
It really was a new experience. I mean, I think that I've heard people talk about it. I certainly, you know, in teaching students, I've had students who've had things happen to them and have talked to them and never really understood, I don't think, just the way that, I mean, I'm the kind of person, I mentioned this in the article, I'm the kind of person who just thinks that, well, if you get the right information in your head and you understand the right things and believe the right way, then you just respond accordingly. I'm kind of a head person in mm-hmm. that regard. And I would often counsel my students in a similar way. Well, this is right and this is wrong and this doesn't make sense. This is not logical. Adjust accordingly. But I realize now, having gone through this traumatic injury, that even though my head can be telling me that I'm safe and it's okay and I'm not going to get hit by this car that's going by me, my body still responds in a way that's involuntary and visceral. And it just takes a long time to recover from that and to reconnect sort of that mind-body relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've done some research on Dr. Bessel van der Kolk and how he explains how the body keeps score, brain, mind, and body in the healing of trauma. I find this really fascinating because your mind apparently stores these experiences in an area of your brain, and they're like foot soldiers ready to go 24/7. Mm. They're living in a fight or flight. We don't respond to reason or rationale. We're just doing what we do.
Yeah, you put that so well. And this is actually a book that I was not familiar with. But when I came home and began to recover, a few people recommended it to me. And so I ordered it and began reading it while I was still, you know, still in my hospital bed in the front room of my home. And again, it opened up a whole new world and helped me to understand even before I went through some of these things, because for the first few months, of course, there is such physical pain. That's all, you know, I'm thinking about. But then as I began to feel better and do more of more things, I expected that my mind and body would just be better also, and that I wouldn't have these kinds of involuntary reactions. And it just, this book helped me understand just how real this imprint on the mind and the body is. And it takes time, and it's not something you can just necessarily talk your way out of, at least not directly and immediately.
Right. Now, I think the book also talks about the body has a need to learn that the danger has passed.
Right.
But,
and again,
how do you do that, Karen, when you have to be walking in traffic?
Yes, exactly. I mean, as I it's just something that I the book has helped me to realize that my body is going to react, but I just have to, and I have to let it react, just let my body recover, let my mind recover, and as traumatic as my accident was, it was a one-time thing, and I think constantly now about how that similar kind of experience translates for someone who's been through a much deeper and more prolonged kind of trauma, like soldiers in war or people who've undergone years of abuse. This is a very sobering experience that I've had and has shed light for me on the kinds of experiences that so many around us in even more traumatic ways have.
So, Karen, what if a really well-intentioned Christian friend said, Karen, when you walk across the street, just don't think about it?
Well, I haven't had anyone say that to me
okay.
yet.
Okay, but I mean, people would say your mind doesn't have to go there. And I think the reality is it does go there. And then I think you get a second choice. You get to choose what to think next. But the first choice is always, boy, there it is.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and of course, this mind-body connection is very complicated. And then we bring in, you know, our spiritual nature and the truth of Scripture and the Holy Spirit. And there are lots of extra layers that even a secular doctor might not have, but that doesn't negate the biological and physiological truth that, yes, scientists and doctors like this see. And so, yes, you put it quite well, that there's the first response that might not be voluntary, and then we have choices to make after that. And it, you know, it does, at least in my case, it has diminished. I mean, it used to be when I first came home and started running again that I would picture every single car that was passing me hitting me. And I couldn't really help it. And over time, that has diminished. It's not every car. It's maybe every third or fourth one that I picture that way. And so it is getting better, but it just takes time, and it's partly choice, but it's just partly the you know, deep tissue and the brain recovering from the trauma, which goes very deep.
Yeah, no kidding.
It goes beyond just our conscious mind.
Because, Karen, up until the accident, you had your own senses that told you how to think and how to act accordingly. And since the accident, you've had to rethink that entirely, haven't you?
Yes. I mean, it's just, as I say in the article, I look both ways five times before I cross a street, and I still have not learned to trust my senses again. And so it just still feels like I can't really depend on my senses entirely. And I can still tell myself that's not true. I can, you know, see what I see. But there's still just this, you know, what the book calls a visceral response to the risk that it feels like I'm taking when I cross the street or go out into traffic.
Mm-hmm. Karen, how has your prayer life changed now that this is on your radar?
Well, I don't know that my prayer life has changed. I mean, I always felt I've just have submitted everything to the Lord, and I actually felt even as the accident was happening, and I was recovering, I felt so much in the palm of the Lord, because where else could I be? But I think what has really changed is my deepened awareness that my life really is in God's hands, and I really do want every step and every word and everything that I do to be, you know, in His will as much as I can as an imperfect human being. And it's just deepened my trust that He is in control and it is up to Him, because of course He could have prevented the accident from happening if He wanted to, but also He could have not preserved my life the way that He did. And so there's just this, you know, I'm just thankful to Him and aware that it's all in His hands.
Mm-hmm. Karen, do you think that the church is doing a good job of coming alongside people who have been traumatized?
Well, I think the church is learning. I think I'm learning. I think this is a relatively new topic for the church in its, you know, 2,000-year-old history. And I think we have a long way to go. And I think, you know, abuse and trauma victims have been speaking up for a long time. And I have to admit myself that I have not understood them as well as I can a little bit more a year later. So I think this is new to the church, and I just pray that God uses my accident even just to help those maybe who didn't understand or weren't listening to listen a little bit more closely and try to understand. It's a hard topic, and we have a lot of areas that we need to grow in.
Mm-hmm. It is a really hard topic, and it's a deep dive, and I appreciate you sort of pulling the curtain back a little bit and letting us look into your experience, because you're so articulate and you can paint pictures for us and give us so much hope and encouragement. I do want to take a little break. Karen Swallow Pryor is my guest, a professor of English at Liberty University, and we're talking about a pretty traumatic experience she had about a year ago where she was hit by a bus. And we'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. To the show. I have Karen Swallow Pryor on my studio line. Karen, God bless her, was in a bad accident. She was hit by a bus, and of course, we're so grateful that she survived it. There were a number of broken bones and surgeries, Karen?
A number of broken bones and just one surgery to place a gigantic pin in my pelvis to hold me all together.
Okay. And what happens when you go through the airlines?
You know, I've only had to be patted down once. I think it's probably just they see it and they know what it
okay.
is. It's probably pretty recognizable. And all the other fractured bones, like my fractured spine and ribs and shoulder, all of those just had to heal on their own. There wasn't any surgery for them. So it was, you know, a long time of recovery.
Yeah. So maybe we can talk about some of the spiritual elements of the healing process, because you're now in your first year of healing. And I would love to hear some of your what you consider to be some of the spiritual elements of it.
Well, I think one of them it was kind of, you know, the theme of this article that's prompted this interview is it's really helped me to think about the body in a way, not just my own physical body, but the way that the metaphor that the Bible uses for the church is also the body, and that we can't really separate our spiritual growth and experience and ministry from physical presence, from the physical body. If our body ceases to exist or function or breathe, then so does our spirit. We can't separate those in a human being. And it's really illuminated for me how even our spiritual life is so dependent on the body, the church body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think we live in this sort of spiritual but not religious kind of culture where we say, oh, I can worship God, you know, in nature. I don't need the church. But that's not what the church body is for. The church body is there to sustain our spirit, to minister to us, and they really can't be separated. And for us to think that they can be is just so faulty and wrong.
Mm-hmm. What has been your experience, Karen, returning to work and teaching and writing? What has felt the same to you, and maybe what has felt different?
Well, I would say that going back to teach last fall, which, you know, in the Lord's providence, the timing of school was almost perfectly timed with my ability to walk. There was a little bit of overlap where I still had to use the wheelchair and walker. But having been in bed and not gone anywhere except for the doctors for several months, mm-hmm. and then having to go back to a full-time teaching schedule, I would say that was probably one of the greatest personal, emotional, physical, and spiritual challenges I've had in my life. I didn't see how I could do it. I didn't think I could do it. But I'm so glad that I did, and it was so helpful. I still, you know, had to have some accommodations and was in pain, but teaching gives me such life that once I got back in the classroom, despite the physical limitations and pain, it was really quite healing and marvelous. And it was hard, but it was good.
Mm-hmm. And then did you have any depression when you were in the recovery process?
I don't think that I had anything that I would qualify as clinical depression.
Okay.
I definitely had moments of sadness and frustration. But that was, yeah, it was, I feel like the Lord kind of protected me from that.
Nice.
There was just this time also of healing and resting. And it was more when I thought about the future and how I was going to do things that I, you know, needlessly worried about. And isn't that the story of us all?
Mm-hmm.
But I was surrounded by people who loved and cared for me. I was so well taken care of. And that's another thing that the book, The Body Keeps the Score, talks about, is how healing always happens within the context of relationship, and healthy, loving relationships are necessary for good healing.
Mm-hmm. Did it hurt to laugh?
I don't remember that. I just remember that I didn't cough for months.
Oh, okay.
I think my body just stopped me from doing that or sneeze. And so then when I was finally able to, I was like, oh, I forgot what that was like.
Yeah. Because I've done a couple of shows on trauma, and I know we have a lot of interested listeners here at Faith Radio that have had some experience themselves. And this is why I just, A, love having you on the show, and B, I love having you share this experience. So if you could maybe speak in encouraging, helpful ways to some of the listeners that are maybe having a down day, who are in the place of trying to rebuild and recover from some trauma.
Yeah, the things that I learned that have helped me the most is to understand that first you just have to let your body and mind and emotions experience whatever it is that they need to experience, whether that's sadness or pain or frustration. You can't really ignore it. And then the other really important thing is that I thought my progress and my healing would be linear, and if I felt good one day, I would be better the next day. But there are so many times of, you know, going forward two steps and then going back four steps. That's just normal, and that's okay. And you just have to let your body and your emotions heal on their time frame, knowing it will get better, but it's just going to take time. Time is on our side in this case. Time is redemptive in God's perfect economy.
Mm-hmm. And maybe talk, too, about how important community is and how important it is to be, you know, plugged into a good church where you've got family and church and neighborhood, people that just genuinely love Karen Swallow Pryor and want to bring a casserole by with some kind of cheese item on top.
There were a lot of casseroles, and they were so good. I allowed myself to eat a lot, and whatever people brought me, and it was so good. I understood just how important and how helpful a simple meal was. And for 6 or 8 weeks, we had meals brought to us every day by my school and by my church. And it was such a huge help. Physical, practical assistance can do so much more help than I ever dreamed before that it could. And so being part of a community, it was crucial to my healing and to the support that my family needed as they dropped everything and cared for me. So being part of a community is just important in ways you might never realize you're going to find out.
Mm-hmm. And what would you consider your favorite entree casserole you had?
Oh, well, I will give my husband's choice. We have a colleague who is actually French, and she cooks French food, and she brought us like the traditional coq au vin French dinner, and it was delicious. My husband says it was the best meal he ever had.
Well, she's making us all look bad.
But all the casseroles were really good.
Yeah.
Too.
So me
the
dropping
French
off
meal was the best.
Me dropping off a lousy frozen pizza wouldn't have meant nothing, huh?
Well, you would have had some tough competition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Karen, the experience has been, I'm so glad the Lord spared your life. And I know you've got some residual discomfort. And, of course, the trauma your body has recorded. And it is now something that you're trying to digest over the years will be your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does get better a year out, but I also know that, you know, even just the memories as the year goes by, there are different things that crop up and it will take me off guard. And I hear from people who've had trauma, you know, 10 years ago, and it still affects them. And so it just becomes part of who we are, or part of the imprint on our minds and bodies and souls. And God is good even in all that.
Yeah. As you were recovering and going through all this, did you get any, did you have any verses that really sort of you just kept going over and over in your head, or maybe even got temporarily tattooed on your arm?
No temporary tattoos.
Okay.
But, you know, my life verse for so long has been from Proverbs, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. And I've always taken that in sort of a more metaphorical way. And yet this accident showed it to me in a way that is even more literal. Like the Lord was with me. And even though something terrible happened, he's using even the steps that I'm taking now. And I want them to be used for, you know, for his glory and for to serve the church body. And so I understand that verse in an entirely different way now, too.
I love it. And a couple of verses you included in your article, which was beautifully written, by the way, is Proverbs 3:8, and all who listen to the Lord will find healing to their flesh and refreshment for their bones. And Proverbs 1:33, and will eventually find themselves at ease without dread of disaster. I need to hear that today, Karen. Thank you so much for making time to talk to me. I just so appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's an important conversation, and I'm glad to be part of it.
I agree. Karen Swallow Pryor has been my guest, English professor at Liberty University, and her role of the body in healing after trauma was the article we discussed, and it can be viewed at erlc.com. We'll take a short break and be right back with more.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with the Faith in Life Minute. Scott and Bethany Palmer are known as the money couple, and Scott says when you get into a relationship, you can't expect the other person to suddenly change their money habits.
What you're doing is you're basically saying, this was fine when it was working for me when we were dating, but now that we're married, this isn't going to work. And what we find is that people will give up. People will get to the point where they just can't take anymore. People will get to the point where they say, I just don't want to deal with this person anymore, especially when it comes to money. And they either get divorced or they live separate money lives. And they start living separate money lives, and secret credit cards start creeping in, and separate accounts start creeping in, and all of these things start happening, which make the relationship even worse. And so that judgment and that nitpicking, you have to get to a point where you really have the ability to reflect and say, okay, how are we different? What are the pros and the cons? And then how do we move forward as a couple?
Learn more from Scott and Bethany Palmer at myfaithradio.com.
That wraps up hour one. Hour two is looking really, really nice. We're going to be joined by Tiger McLuhan from Youth Ministry Consultants. And then my friend and Bible scholar, Eric Bargerhoff, is going to be joining me. He is a professor at Trinity, and he's written a couple of books. One is in the making, and it's a tease about stuff you simply cannot believe is in the Bible. It's going to be a lot of fun. That's all ahead coming up on the next hour. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.